Words on Water.
Hi, this is Travis Loop, the host of Words on Water, and I'm very excited for today's episode because we are joined by Philippe Cousteau. How are you doing today?
I'm terrific, thanks.
Great, great. So this is a unique guest for us here on Words on Water, and we're looking forward to a conversation. Could you tell our listeners kind of what you're up to these days? What's really the focus of your work on a day-to-day basis?
Well, we are doing all sorts of different things, and one of the most exciting is our work with youth through Earth Echo International. In fact, we are here at a school in Chicago right now for Waterpalooza, a big event with hundreds of kids that are celebrating water, getting engaged in understanding the issues around water and how they have an important role in being stewards of water. So the work with Earth Echo is really, really exciting because we're all about helping the next generation get engaged and be the problem solvers of so many of the challenges that we face today. We also, other parts of my life, we have a lot of fun. I film and host a series called Awesome Planets, syndicated show every Saturday morning nationally. And then with my wife, I have a brand new series called Caribbean Pirate Treasure on the Travel Channel.
All right.
So we're busy, but it's always exploring the world, adventure, be it in the classroom or on television.
Yeah, I'm glad you noted that we're at an elementary school today because we have the windows open here and the kids are outside starting to do some educational activities with water, so we might get some background noise, but in a good way.
Exactly. They were just chanting water a little bit ago, so the chorus of 100 elementary school kids chanting water, we like that.
Yeah, especially in kind of inner city Chicago here, you know, and that's great stuff. So a lot of our listeners are involved in the water sector, kind of on the utility side and that type of thing. You know, you travel around the world, you're around a lot of different water bodies, lakes and rivers and the ocean and bays and that type of thing. Could you talk about kind of your thoughts on how water infrastructure impacts those waterways that you spend a lot of time around?
Well, the first thing I would say is that I have such good fortune that I'm able to travel around and see other parts of the world, and I can really say that we are spoiled in this country. In so many places that I visit, you really can't trust the quality of the water that you're drinking out of the tap in a major city. I think we forget just how lucky we are because of the hard work of the people who work in this industry to ensure that they deliver healthy, clean water to us every single day across the country. And in many places, they just don't have that reliable level of performance and service and infrastructure. So it's a growing industry, certainly. And I think as many countries continue to develop their infrastructure, it's getting higher and higher on their list of priorities. Which is good to see, but nevertheless, we are very fortunate in this country.
Yeah, and so the drinking water is obviously a huge issue as you go around the world, but then I imagine, the water quality in rivers and in,
management of wastewater is a huge issue in a lot of places.
Yeah.
Best practices around agriculture as well. We see a lot of disease still in a lot of parts of the world because people don't have access to sanitation. Mm. They don't have access to that kind of infrastructure. Mm-hmm. There's a huge effort, for example, in India that's ongoing now with Modi's efforts to try and get people to use toilets and to have access to toilets.
Yeah.
But when you think that there are a few hundred million people in India that still don't have access to a toilet, that gives a sense of the scale of the crisis when we talk about not just access to drinking water, but waste management, etc.
That's amazing, right? When you think about those numbers, the population in places like India and China, and the public health implications and the environmental implications of not having sanitation like toilets and sewers.
Yeah, huge environmental implications, of course. And when we look at the proliferation of dead zones because of agricultural runoff, and we still have a lot of problems with that here in the United States.
Sure.
There's a question, the Gulf of Mexico is kind of the poster child for that, but it happens throughout the United States. And, you know, the Chesapeake Bay is another great example of a system that is not quite up to snuff, let's say, in terms of treating agricultural runoff, waste management, you know, non-point source pollution, just off parking lots, things like that, and you know, direct dumping into water systems. But we do, you do a relatively good job in this country, and I think it's, again, something that we take for granted at our own peril, because, you know, we always lament the fact, and a lot of our work is trying to make water front and center so that people understand in their communities and their homes that water doesn't come out of a tap. It comes from somewhere. And there's a lot of infrastructure and people behind that water that are delivering it to you in a way that you can drink it. And we do, I think it's so much of it is out of sight, out of mind in this country, and that's a problem. Because then we take it for granted, and then we don't have the will of politicians to invest in maintaining that infrastructure. There's a lot of talk of highways and bridges and all the kinds of things that you can see. But waste management, water management, all the things that go on behind the scenes that aren't as visible to the public are absolutely crucial to our health. And so part of our work with the Earth Echo Water Challenge is engaging young people in understanding where their water comes from, in testing the quality of that water, sharing the knowledge that they've gained, and then being part of programs to improve the quality of that water so that we stop taking it for granted and that we can begin to connect the dots between the health of ourselves and access to clean, healthy water and what it takes to deliver that clean, healthy water.
Yeah. You've said two things I want to follow up on. Let's see. The first one is, you know, the public will and the political will. You know, we've seen several things happen, high-profile news stories the past few years in the U.S. with the Flint drinking water crisis, with the pretty heavy, serious drought in California. And last summer, there were some big algae blooms in Florida, you know, that really impacted recreation and tourism and all that type of thing. And so these things do keep happening, and they're high-profile. And there's a lot of talk when they're happening, but do you think we're seeing the political will and the public will continue from big events like that? I mean, they're high profile, but are we still getting the momentum we need out of that to really address, you know, water issues and invest in water infrastructure and that type of thing?
I think they help, but I don't believe that they are changing the dynamic as much as we would like. But certainly, they are a rallying cry for people, and I think woke up a lot of people. But when we look at how we create the sustained desire on behalf of the public to support these issues, the reason we focus on youth and education is because if we're not preparing young people to understand and connect the dots around these types of issues, they're not going to grow up to be informed adults. The reason we focus on young people is because it is a much easier lift to get them to understand these issues than to try and approach an adult and deal with adults and their, you know, attention span that is even shorter and they're focused on their jobs and all these other things.
Right.
So we really focus on young people because not only do we have an opportunity to help frame the dialogue and the discussion around these issues for them at an early age so that they're equipped with the knowledge as they become adults, but also the influence that young people have on their parents. So I think this is oftentimes overlooked when you think about a youth strategy, which unfortunately as an environmental movement, we don't invest nearly enough effort and resources in a youth strategy, because you get that double return on investment. One of the biggest influencers of adults are their kids.
Absolutely.
And so we're getting the opportunity to reach the adults in a way that if we do PSAs or if we do, you know, public education campaigns, isn't nearly as impactful as their elementary or middle or high school kid coming home saying, "Mom, Dad, we need to do something about this. Let's get engaged. What's the issues? What's going on here? This is what I'm interested in. I'm going to do this as my science project." That engages the parents in a way that other public education campaigns could never hope to do. So it's critical that we focus on a younger generation to help them, as I said, connect the dots about these issues. In understanding that they need to take an active role in supporting the investment infrastructure, supporting politicians that want to invest in this infrastructure, because a lot of politicians, you know, it's out of sight, out of mind. They want to be able to put their name up on a bridge or on a highway or something like that that people see and use every day. And the key word there is see. And it's more difficult for them when they say, hey, everybody, I know you can't see this new sewer system or this new waste treatment system that we did, and it's kind of completely outside, but we funded it, and people are like, oh, okay.
Great.
So if they don't understand and care about it, then they're not going to, you know, give the political cover that we need to invest.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on educating the kids, you know, I think you saw some of that back when seatbelts were kind of, you know.
Seatbelt campaigns, smoking cessation
campaigns. Recycling.
Recycling. Great examples, Travis, because, you know, the seatbelt campaigns became successful when they started targeting kids to pressure their parents to put their seatbelts on.
Mm-hmm.
Smoking cessation really took off when it was pressuring the kids to pressure their parents to stop smoking.
Yeah.
And they're really good leverage points in society, and that's why we focus on them.
Yeah, I mean, I have a 9-year-old boy and a 6-year-old boy, and they're big influencers on me in many ways. So, you know, their opinion counts. And you're getting it's a short-term and a long-term payoff. You know, you mentioned the short-term return on the investment, and they go home and talk to their parents, and some actions can change from that. Mm-hmm. But then 20 years from now, when they're adults, they're going to have a much different mindset and environmental kind of stewardship ethic.
Absolutely. So, I mean, we think that caring about water and water issues is something that that would just come naturally and people would automatically support, but that's just not the case. Like anything in society, we have to train and teach people to understand, connect the dots, to care, and to act.
One other issue I wanted, we'll dive deeper into the water challenge a little bit, but one other issue is climate change. And I wanted to kind of talk to you about that. That ties into kids for sure and educating them. First, what do you see firsthand in water impacts as you go around the world? What kind of changes are you actually seeing out there?
Well, you know, when you think about things like climate change, fortunately, around the world, it is not nearly the contentious issue that it continues to be here in this country. There is, although I will say, you know, there's movement and willingness to take action in some ways internationally more than here in the U.S., at least on a federal level. That said, the first scientists to link human emissions of carbon and a greenhouse effect was over 100 years ago. So nobody gets a gold star for action on this issue. Because we've all dragged our feet way too long.
Wow.
And are already paying the consequences for it. I think that elsewhere in the world, I know that it is not nearly as political as it is in the United States. There's not a debate about whether or not we should take action. There's more debate on what degree and what level of action should be taken.
Okay.
Whereas here, unfortunately, particularly with this administration, we have continue to have a deny and delay strategy that is alarming to say the least. Now, that being said, where we continue to see terrific innovation and movement is on the state and local level in this country. Red and blue states alike are realizing, wow, when we do smarter infrastructure, when we have public transportation, when we do energy efficiency and require LEED certification for buildings, we're saving money. The municipality is saving money. The neighborhoods are healthier, which also saves us money. You know, the light bulbs are starting to go off, I think, when it really comes down to the local issues.
Yeah.
I think there are those in higher levels of power that can continue to exploit a false narrative that there's division on the science and that people don't agree and all these other things to their own benefit. You know, it's the old division strategy, divide people in politics so that you can, you know, manipulate them.
Right.
That's essentially what it is.
Yeah.
It's a public manipulation strategy. And to politicize any of these kinds of fundamental issues, because in my opinion, protecting the environment, water, air, etc., should be a universal truth.
Sure.
Unfortunately, there are politicians out there that see it as a means to power to not do so.
Yeah.
So I think that the good news is coming from the states and the local municipalities. I mean, you're looking at, again, Republican and Democratic strongholds that are starting to realize that this makes sense to protect our health, to protect our economy, and they're acting accordingly, and that's a little hopeful.
And you see the private sector, even the biggest corporations, right? They are taking action. They're realizing that they're, just from a strict business standpoint, that their interests are being impacted or are vulnerable. And so they're acting accordingly, and they're also realizing the economic benefits of taking action and you know, that type of thing.
Well, that's just it. You know, I United Technologies is a partner of Earth Echo, and they support a whole STEM career program that we have. And I've spent some time with them, and they're one of the biggest companies, conglomerate companies in the world. They own all sorts of different Otis Elevators and Pratt & Whitney, and I mean, all sorts of different big companies Carrier mm-hmm. air conditioning. And you go and you meet with them and you talk to them, and they're like, being environmentally friendly makes business sense.
Yeah.
We're able to offer engines that have better fuel efficiency. Yes, it's great because it's cutting carbon emissions, but it's also saving money for our customers.
Mm-hmm.
And those dollars trickle down to savings in the cost of running the product and the price of the product that the consumers are purchasing. When we are using CO2 as opposed to other refrigerants, but we're actually just using CO2 as a refrigerant in a large container ship, we're saving a lot of money. We're also eliminating these horrible fluorocarbons that are mm-hmm. Have a thousandfold more greenhouse effect than carbon dioxide. So they're like, it makes sense for us to protect the environment, because every step along the way when we do that, we're saving money to our bottom line. We're able to invest that money in R&D, invest that money back in our employees, hire more people. So it is definitely a lie mm-hmm. when we talk about environmental sustainability as being a drain on the environment or the economy and costing jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's a tired narrative that mm-hmm. we need to get beyond in this mm-hmm. country.
Yeah, like I was alluding to before, it's not just projected impacts in the future. I think, you know, in water, you're seeing impacts now with warmer temperatures, warmer water temperatures, already seeing sea level rise. You're seeing stronger storms. You're seeing really wildly changing rainfall patterns. You know, these droughts.
There's two great examples. One, I was in the Great Barrier Reef filming last March, and it is as bad as the news reports have reported. It's devastating. Because of the temperature increase in the water is smothering the corals, killing the corals. But another one that I like to help people connect the dots around water is, when we talk about these issues, we have to talk about them in the context of sustainability and the economy and our security. Because Syria is a great example. Syria, the conflict in Syria was driven initially by drought. Syria, over the last decade, has seen some of the worst drought actually in its history. And as agriculture collapsed in the countryside of that country, people migrated into the cities that were unable to support them with infrastructure and jobs and opportunity. And so the people started to protest and riot. And that gave birth to an entire civil war movement in Syria. The government then cracked down, the protests got more aggressive, and we essentially saw the crisis and the war in Syria that was driven by the seeds of that conflict were driven by drought and ineffective water management systems.
Yeah.
And so that crisis, a water crisis, has contributed to things like the war that is now spilled over because a million refugees have fled Syria mm-hmm. and fled to Europe, destabilizing the global geopolitical system.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start seeing things like Brexit. You start seeing all these responses to the fear of these refugees, all stemming from a water crisis.
Yeah.
And so
A basic human need. Yeah.
I think it doesn't take a genius to recognize that, again, this is not just a debate about water. This is a debate of fundamental rights. This is a debate about our security, about our economy. And we cannot afford to not invest in water
mm-hmm.
because when we don't, things like Syria happen.
Yeah, somewhat related, I just was reading an NPR story about Puerto Rico and Hurricane Maria, you know, and a quote from somebody there about, I can live without power, I can't live without water, you know, and just getting back to how fundamental it is and how we just need to take care of it. Shifting gears, but on that same point, how do you talk and how do you talk to kids about climate change? And that's such a big picture story, you know, and maybe scary for them. I think they get water in the river by their house, but I mean, yeah, is that a topic you guys talk to kids about, or have
definitely,
you
know? And but it's what's interesting about it is so often, even when you're talking to elementary school kids, but certainly with middle and definitely with high school as well, we're not introducing the concept of that. They are already very aware.
Wow,
young people have the world of knowledge at their fingertips in a phone. They see the news. They know what's going on. I've never met a kid yet who says, meh. You know, the same fundamental science that underlies our modern medicine system and things like that. Well, we'll believe it there, but we won't believe it when it comes to the, you know,
yeah,
to climate change.
Yeah.
I never meet kids that say that. Kids are always, like, frustrated that the adults are the ones that are delaying action. So we don't actually have to go in and explain climate change to kids. They're already aware that water is precious, coral reefs are dying, animals are disappearing, the climate's changing, people are suffering. They're usually teaching us.
Mm-hmm.
And what we really see is a desire amongst kids to just take action and to do something about it. And that's really where we come in, and providing the resources and the tools to young people around the world, both in the classroom and after school programs, to basically say, listen, whatever you're passionate about, here's essentially ways that you can get engaged in these issues. And so we walk them through and provide training and opportunity and things like that for kids. But it's not a debate about whether or not this is happening. It's more an eagerness to do something,
yeah,
which is refreshing.
So on how the Water Challenge can help kids, I know that from our standpoint, Water Environment Federation, we're looking to kind of build our partnership with you all and start using the Water Challenge, start kind of getting the water utility sector, if you will, to use that as a tool to kind of engage kids as they maybe come to their facilities or as utilities are out there at community events. Could you talk about how you think that might be helpful to showing kids about how utilities play an important role in the health of their waterways? I mean, that's kind of the connection we're trying to draw there.
Well, it's we have a saying at Earth Echo that awareness doesn't lead to action. Action is what leads to awareness.
Mm.
And that is grounded in years of work that we've done in behavioral psychology and research. So what that means is that programs like the Earth Echo Water Challenge are an opportunity for young people, as we hear them.
We hear them out there, yeah.
Having fun. is an opportunity for them to actually take a kit that does some basic water quality testing, to go outdoors with their family, with their classroom, with their teacher, whatever it may be, to test water, to take action, to take their time to do that. And what that does is it allows them to actually be engaged in a program as opposed to sitting there listening to an adult talk
mm-hmm.
to them about it,
mm-hmm.
Which has very little lasting memory. When you know, we hear stuff all day long and we forget it.
Oh yeah.
But when we do something, we remember and we believe. And that investment of time and taking action then leads them to be much more aware and much more understanding of the issue because they've actually touched it, seen it, done it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the power of the Earth Echo Water Challenge is really about connecting people to their watersheds in a meaningful and actionable way.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding the basics of water quality testing and what that means and why it's important, and then giving them the tools to say, okay, now that you're armed with this knowledge, share it with the world through our apps and our database, and then also, here are the resources and tools that you can do to come up with your own program to improve the quality of water.
Hmm.
Whether you want to do a cleanup, whether you want to pass a law or work in the legislative system. I've seen lots of kids in elementary, middle, and high come together as school programs, as clubs, as groups of friends, and pass actual laws in cities and
wow.
states. And it's really remarkable what kids can do. We can't write them off. We can't just assume that they're powerless, because they are not.
Yeah.
And but they need that spark. They need that first step and that inspiration. And that's what really the Earth Echo Water Challenge is all about. And it's over 1.5 million people have participated in over 60 countries around the world. And it's a terrific program. So yeah, we're always looking for partnerships with municipalities, with groups that want to look for a way for their employees to get engaged with the local community. We partner with Xylem, which is our main sponsor of the Earth Echo Water Challenge, and they're absolutely terrific. They get it. Mm-hmm. They understand. They have a whole employee volunteer program that really we work with them to facilitate the employees getting outdoors with their families, with their kids, doing this program, recording their results. And it's great for the employees, it's great for the kids. Everybody has a good time getting outdoors together and doing something productive and positive.
Yeah. We have a kind of a hashtag campaign that's gone on for a while, a hashtag My Water Legacy. And it's where people in the water sector kind of get to tell their stories and how they're leaving a legacy for the water sector and doing their part. And I can just tell that this is something you're super passionate about and is part of your water legacy for sure. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I knew that today's conversation would be very interesting and enjoyable, but I'm fired up right now. I'm looking forward to going outside now and seeing some kids learn about water. So thanks for your time a lot.
Listen, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for everything y'all do at WEF. We are delighted to partner with you on all sorts of different things and we enjoy working with you all the time. So we're excited about the future, and I think the future, as we come together, there's a lot of hope, despite what we hear in the headlines these days, and we just have to keep fighting for a better world.
Yeah, thank you. Words.